Hey guys, you're listening to another episode of Nick Talk with me, Nikki James, and today I have on a very special guest, Mr. Ernie Almond. How are you, Ernie?
Well, bless my soul, it's Nikki James. I'm very well, thank you, Nikki. Very well. A long time no speak.
I know. Thank you so much for coming on with me.
Pleasure. My pleasure.
So you are a child's entertainer and you're a radio DJ. I know you're a lot of other things. You wear a lot of other hats, but you know, we work together, so I had to get you on.
We work together on radio, but I've made my living from children's entertainment mainly, well, most of my life. After I finished an apprenticeship as, believe it or not, Nikki, an electronics engineer.
Really?
But, but I'm going back a long time when they used to use valves.
Oh, my. Wow. Yeah. So how'd you get started in children's entertainment?
Well, first of all, I was always interested in entertaining generally. And then when I suppose, 10 or 11 years old, I got an interest in magic, you know, conjuring. Mm. And I got to be, you know, reasonably good at it. Mm. And eventually I met, which I'll tell you about later because it's quite a good story, I met somebody who was also working for the electronics firm, funnily enough, that I work for. But he'd left there and started his own business. And he asked me to join him. And so really, I met him on the cabaret circuit, not children's entertainment at all.
Oh,
so
wow.
it's a long and involved story, but there's some funny bits on the way, I might tell you.
Okay. What's the very first thing that you ever did in children's entertaining?
Well, my first public performance, if you could call it that, I can remember this. I was about 5 years old, and at our local church, every year to raise money, they used to put on a concert, and it used to sell out for 2 nights. It was absolutely packed, and everybody was in it. Well, of course, the Sunday school, the children, of which I was a member in those days, they had to do just a little turn, and they decided this year to do a song which you're far too young to remember, Nikki. It was "Soldier, Soldier, Won't You Marry Me With Your Musket, Fife and Drum." I remember it. Oh. And they chose the best-looking boy in the class, which I hasten to add was not me. And a girl, and she wore a sort of crinoline, you know, like sort of, if you can imagine, the 1890s type of dress.
Okay.
And the song is him making excuses not to marry her because he hasn't got a coat to wear or he hasn't got a hat to wear. And each time he says this, it's all in the song. She has to go to a trunk and she found him a hat of the very, very best. And the soldier put it on. So that was the story. Well, the rest of us, we were like the chorus.
Okay.
And and so what you can imagine, 8 or 9 5-year-old boys with no theatrical experience at all, we had to go to another trunk whilst he was fitting this coat on just to fill the time and pick up a gun, a rifle, so that we could march like soldiers.
Yeah.
Well, like we thought were soldiers anyway. And on the dress rehearsal, they realised they were one gun short. Well, when you've got 5-year-old boys, that's not good enough. But one of the mothers said, "Oh, I've got a wooden gun at home. I'll bring it in." Well, the guns we had were just a piece of flat wood cut out roughly, like the shape of a gun, just to, you know. But she brought in this beautifully painted Tommy gun. Anyway, they thought, well, that's all right. So they put it in the trunk. And then each night on every verse, can you imagine these 8 little boys or little soldiers marched up to the trunk at the back of the stage to get their gun where there was a fight because they all wanted this beautifully painted. Yeah. So we brought the house down. So at 5 years old, I've got an idea that stuck in my brain that I enjoyed making people laugh because I really hammed it up.
Oh.
I thought it was wonderful, all these people laughing. Mm-hmm. Of course, they were laughing at something that shouldn't have happened.
Right.
So there we are. That's the first public performance that I ever remember.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about all this, I looked in I was moving house, and lo and behold, I found, I wish I could show it to you now, a photograph of that actual performance.
Oh, wow.
So when I go round to talk to my ladies' clubs, I take that with me and get them to try and guess which one is me at 5 years old.
So you go around and talk to ladies' clubs. Tell me a little bit about that.
I do, yeah. After virtually, I call it a lifetime of children's entertainment because it is virtually that. I mean, it's a long time. 1970, I went full-time.
Wow.
And I only finished about 3 or 4 years ago. I decided to to retire from it. But I did all of those years. Very interesting, some of the places I managed to get to doing children's stuff. And I thought, oh, I could... and I think one of the ladies... we've got a thing in England called the WI, which is the Women's Institute. You've probably got something very similar in America, I think.
Okay.
Well, they meet monthly or weekly and have a chat, and they often have a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got onto that circuit. One of them asked me to talk about my life as a children's entertainer, and we had a lot of laughs, and I got one or two of the ladies there making balloon dogs towards the end of it. And it caught on. Next thing I know, I'm doing two or three a month.
Oh, wow.
Every month of the year. Until COVID arrived, I hasten to add, then that put paid to all of that. But there we are. It'll start again.
Has that completely... Have you been... You haven't done any...
Well, no, I've been busy broadcasting, doing radio, because you can do that. But I haven't done any live shows.
Yeah.
For, in fact, the theatre in England, you know how important it is in England,
mm-hmm.
with the West End and that. You know, they're in dire straits, really, because it's all been so difficult.
Yeah.
It's not just the audiences. You can get half an audience in and space them apart, can't
right.
you?
Yeah.
But then you have to remember, if you're dancers, you're not allowed to touch each other.
Right.
You can imagine. You can't even put the show on. So... I'm a dancer, as you well know, Nikki.
Yeah. Well, over here, in the industry over here, like acting and theater, they just have them do tests. You have to get COVID tested, and then you have to do a COVID test every single time before you come in.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about the audiences?
No audience.
Do they have to have a certificate to say they've been tested or something?
No audience. And no audience for games either, for like American football.
Oh, yeah. That's the same as here.
Yeah. Mm. You just get the noise in the background.
Yes.
I've been watching.
Canned laughter.
Yeah, exactly. I've been watching, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a Liverpool fan, so I keep up with them. And
oh, no, I didn't know that.
I've been watching Liverpool over here, and it's so funny, the background noise. I'm thinking...
we had this very weekend on television, although it was filmed, 10 days ago,
mm-hmm.
we had the biggest theatrical event of the year, which is the Royal Variety Show.
Oh.
And usually the London Palladium is the home for it, and mm-hmm. Her Majesty the Queen is there and one or two others, and it raises a lot of money for charity. Mm-hmm. Well, this year, of course, the Queen certainly couldn't go, and they didn't have an audience.
Right.
So it was a very different kettle of fish, as they say.
Yeah, wow. I bet that looked completely different.
Mm, yeah, it wasn't as good as the one that we usually have.
Right.
There's something about having a live audience in, isn't there?
There really is. I think it spurs on a lot of...
Although you and I, who work in radio, we're quite used to talking to ourselves.
No, we really are. We could talk all day long. That's true.
Yeah.
Not a lot of dead space with us, is there, Ernie?
No, that's right.
All right, so I wanted to talk to you about
Marconi's.
Marconi's. Dang it, yeah.
Yeah. Macaroni's a pasta.
Macaroni. I love macaroni. Especially with cheese. No. So tell me about Marconi's.
Well, Marconi's is the electronics firm who are now... They've gone years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it was named after Marconi himself. He didn't invent television, but he was well at the fore.
Okay.
But I did an apprenticeship for 5 years with them.
Really?
When I first left school, trained to be an electronics engineer. And I often tell people that I left, that highly technical job to blow up balloons for a living.
That's funny.
A little more than that, but virtually that's what I did. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then we...
So I did a 5-year apprenticeship, and then I moved on to another firm.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, I've had enough of this electronics, and went into entertaining children.
So when you were talking about Istanbul and Royal Connections, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, obviously that was quite a lot later on, because you need to become very well established before you get invitations to entertain any royal children, as you can imagine.
Okay.
So that many years later on, the first one that I did... I remember was a party for... Do you remember King Constantine, who was the king of Greece when they had a king?
Oh, wow.
And he now lives in London. And he had two older children and two younger ones. The older ones were you know, quite a lot older. The younger ones were ideal age for a children's party, you know, 6 or 7 years old. And he invited me to go to his house to entertain at his son and daughter's party. They're not twins, but their birthdays happen to be close together. So they had a joint party. And I was doing my act, which is quite long. It's 2 hours long, this act of mine. And they have a break in, you know, in the middle for their party tea and all the rest of it. And one of the guests there was, believe it or not, Prince Harry.
Oh, wow.
And when he was only about 5 years old, of course, five and a half maybe, the reason he was there is because King Constantine is his godfather.
Oh, wow.
So the two families are very close. And he was there, and I was in the middle of one routine, which was particularly funny. And all of and you know what they're like when they're 5 or 6 years old, especially boys, they tend to fall over backwards laughing on the floor, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they were all like that, all over the place. And we were having a great time. And all of a sudden, he got up and he rushed into a little anteroom at the side where all the nannies were having their, the children's nannies having their cup of tea, you know, while I got on with it.
Yep.
And I heard him because he was so excited and he shouted loud. He said, "Nanny, nanny, you must come and see this. It's so funny."
Oh, my
And I thought, ah, right, there's a chance here. So I had to wait. I had to wait quite a lot of months. And sure enough, a letter came from Kensington Palace saying, would I go and do his 7th birthday party? That's how many months it was. He was 5 and a half. And they plan a long way in advance.
Yeah.
And so I did.
Wow. So you went and did his 7th.
That's how that all started. Yeah.
So how was the 7th birthday party when you went?
Well, it was brilliant. Actually, it wasn't the first time I'd been to Kensington, because I'd been there previously for the Gloucesters, their children.
Okay.
And so I had been in there. The very first time you ever go, you think, oh, I've got to get through security with a box of magic tricks. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
You know, and a rabbit.
Right. Did you take a live rabbit?
I did then. We don't use animals ever now, but and we're going back a few years.
Yeah, of course.
And but what surprised me was when you go into Kensington Palace at the Kensington end, the town end of the drive that goes into the palace, a long drive, so you can imagine, there's policemen, and they just nodded and waved me on. And
oh,
I thought, oh, I thought they would stop. The second lot, you have to go through two lots of police. They're not soldiers. They are just the Metropolitan Police.
Okay.
And the second lot used my first name. Hello, Ernie. Are you well? And I'm thinking, that this was in the days when we were having some bombings in London, and they had to check under the car with a mirror on the end of a stick.
Right.
But that's about all they did. And of course, what you don't realise is all the security has already been done.
Yeah.
Unbeknown to you, you know.
Yeah.
And so I went in there and did the party. It went quite well. At the end of it, Princess Diana said, "Can you stay on for a while?" Well, you're not going to say no, are you?
Oh, wow.
So I said, "Absolutely, of course I can. What for?" And she said, "Well, the Metropolitan Police themselves know that it's Harry's birthday party, and they've offered to do a demonstration with the police dogs."
Oh.
And you're the only one that can control. Because remember, they were 7 by now, and they're very lively boys.
Oh, yeah.
Well, boys and girls. And I had 35 of them at this party. Oh, she said, "You're the only one here that can control them. So will you please, we've got to march them out into the garden, because this demonstration was going to happen in the garden of Kensington Palace." So I said, "Yeah, of course I can." So I got them all in a sort of crocodile line with Prince Harry at the front and marched them out into the garden. And I always remember, because Prince Charles was obviously there, and he looked at me. Now, it didn't occur to me what was in his mind, and I'll tell you later what. He said to me, he looked at my, I used to wear a clown outfit, a very bright, spotty thing with a pointed clown hat, if you can imagine all that.
Okay.
And a ruff. And he did a double take as we're walking across the lawn, the garden, and he said to me, "That's a bit bright, isn't it?" And I didn't know what to say, so I sort of mumbled something. And, "Well, I'm sorry, sir, I didn't realise I'd be coming out here." And he said, "Can't you turn it inside out or something?"
No.
So I remember thinking, I certainly didn't say it, I remember thinking to myself, "Well, you might use Savile Row tailors, mate, but this is cheap. If I turn it inside out, it'll be just as spotty on the inside."
Exactly. Oh, my goodness.
And so, yeah, that was really quite a brilliant experience.
Wow.
About 3 days later, I had a phone call from a friend of mine who just happened to be in Paris on one of these weekend trips. Mm-hmm. And he said, "You're in the Paris edition of Hello Magazine." Do you have Hello Magazine in America?
You know, not as far as I know.
It's sort of glossy fashion magazine.
Okay, yeah. I don't think so.
And I said, "In the Hello Magazine? How can I be in that?" He said, "I don't know, but you are." So you can imagine, I rushed straight to the nearest news agent. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I got myself a copy, which I kept to this day. And believe it or not, there were 6 pages of beautiful colour photographs.
Wow.
In this very, very upmarket magazine. Well, it was upmarket then. It's mm-hmm. not quite so now. And 6 pages of these photographs. Now, I didn't see a camera the entire day. So somehow or other, the press had got themselves hidden about a mile away, and they must have had lenses about 6 foot long.
Yeah.
But they were quite good photographs, but taken from Hyde Park, which is the public... Mm-hmm. A part the public can go into, and it's next to, but quite a long way away from, Kensington Palace Gardens. And so you can imagine, 6 pages in that magazine did my business no harm whatsoever.
Oh, wow.
And that's how it all burst, yeah.
Wow.
Amazing, isn't it?
That's really, really interesting.
Yeah. And I often think now Prince Harry's in America with his lovely new wife, mm-hmm. and... I often think I'd like to write to him and say, "Look, I think I could still do one more party if you want one for your son and heir."
You'd be coming over to my neck of the woods. He lives here in California, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, he lives over there somewhere. I don't know where. And of course, if I did, I wouldn't say.
Right. Yeah, they're always here in California and Los Angeles. So. Mm,
Yeah. Right.
Wow. Okay. So, you trained some people too, as well, didn't you?
Well, yeah. The chap that I joined with this children's entertainment business, mm-hmm. and we gradually got busier and busier. And then he decided to retire mm-hmm. when he was only 50. He decided to retire and went to live abroad. So I took over the business mm-hmm. and we were getting busier and busier. And eventually I had 9 full-time entertainers plus me, which is 10.
Wow.
And if you can imagine trying to find, they wanted 9 bookings a week each. That's 1 every day of the week and 2 on Saturdays and 2 on Sundays.
Wow.
So I had to find 9 times 10 of us parties every week. I had to find 90 children's parties somewhere in Britain, and I did that for 22 years.
Wow.
I bet that
kept you so busy.
Well, it got me down a bit. It was so busy that even at home mm-hmm. people would be phoning at 11 o'clock at night, when you're in the middle of a television program or something,
right?
And so I decided to find a little office so that I could put an answer phone machine on. Because the business was growing, so I needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether you remember the singer called Frank Ifield.
I do not.
Going back to the 60s, you probably don't. But he was very popular in England, and he used to yodel, I remember that, and sing. He's an Australian. He's back in Australia now, but he lived here then.
Okay.
And his wife, who's a dancer, mm-hmm. Had just finished dancing and decided to open a theatrical shop. And I was in there chatting to her one day, and it turned out she wanted to sell the shop. So I bought that theatrical shop and put my clown agency, which is sort of theatrical, in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran it there for 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. Now, was that in London?
No, that was in a place called Harpenden, which is in Hertfordshire. If anybody knows anything mm-hmm. of England, Hertfordshire is about 25 miles north of London.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Just to give you an idea.
Yeah, very nice.
Mm.
And then, so you did that for a long time. You started, when did you end up leaving that behind, with all the 90?
I ran that for that 10 years, and then I decided to sell the business. So I sold the shop separately and the clown agency separately.
Okay.
It's still going, I hasten to add, although I'm not running it. But yeah, well, both of them are. So that was quite good, wasn't it?
Wow.
Interesting times in there, though. Once I was in the shop,
uh-huh.
and the phone rang, and this person said, "Would you come to Istanbul?" Can you imagine? Wow. Opening gambit, that's not bad. Yeah. And I said, Istanbul, what do you want me to come to Istanbul for?
Right.
He said, well, we're actually from London, he said. And he was like the managing director of an oil company, but based in Istanbul or something like that.
Yeah.
And he got quite a good job. And he said, but I'm from London and my two children, the only thing they can remember is you or one of your entertainers entertaining at parties.
Wow.
Well, of course, there were 10 of us. So every party they went to was one or the other of us, and we all wore identical outfits.
Wow.
So it was a bit like having 10 Frank Sinatras all in different venues and everybody thinking they were watching the real one. If you get how it works.
Yeah,
it's a good idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so he said, would you come over? So not half. I said, well, you send me the tickets and I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I flew over. There again, imagine going through customs with my box full of tricks. Well, I did.
Oh,
and I got to the hotel in Istanbul, where I'd never been before, fairly early morning on this plane.
Mm-hmm.
And at lunchtime, they buzzed me up from reception and said, there's a car waiting for you. And I thought, well, that's weird. I'm not doing the party till tomorrow. And he very kindly had sent his driver with this huge limousine. Imagine, I'm not used to huge limousines.
Right,
you know,
oh my goodness.
To take me to show me the sights, because he realised that I was there, but I had nothing to do.
Oh.
So this driver of his took me round. I went to see the Sultan's Palace. If anybody that's listening has ever been to Istanbul, they'll know. The Blue Mosque, which is fantastic, and the Sultan's Palace. And then the next day I did the party.
Yeah.
There were 55 children. Only two of those children spoke one word of English.
Oh.
And I don't speak Turkish very well, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting couple of hours. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning, after I'd finished, he himself turned up in the same limousine with his driver to take me to the, what do they call it there? The Medina, you know, where there are loads and loads of little shops all inside.
Yes.
And every shop we went into were sort of over the moon to see us and giving us cups of teas. So after a while, I was gurgling with all this tea I've been drinking. But I said to him, they're very generous here, aren't they? He said, well, you have to bear in mind that I employ almost all of their families.
Yeah, right.
So that was a fascinating trip.
Wow.
Imagine that, just to go and do a children's party in Istanbul.
Wow.
Wonderful.
That's really neat. You've done a lot of really cool things.
Yeah.
I know you've worked with some really cool people too, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, worked with.
Yeah.
I've worked with and worked for. As far as children's entertainment's concerned, one day I had a call from, I think she's known in America because she's done musicals in America, Twiggy, who used to be, you know Twiggy.
Yep.
Yeah. I had a call to do her daughter's party, which was lovely.
Oh.
And when I got there, there was a long settee and the adults were on the settee. And as I looked up, you can imagine how scary for a children's entertainer. Every parent sitting on this settee was a huge, huge star of the theatre because they're all friends of Twiggy's. That was a little bit off-putting.
Yeah.
However, I did it. And then Twiggy was wonderful. She used to recommend me to other people.
You know,
was Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, really? One of the parents?
Yeah, well, it was his own party.
Oh.
He had a party whilst he was in England. He was working in England, and it was his birthday, so he decided to throw a party in a wonderful little restaurant right on the Thames, on the embankment in London. And she said, no, you have to have Ernie. Well, my stage name is Smarty Arty, believe it or not. So this clown with all these sweet, you know, dots all over him.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to have him because you've got children coming. And so that's how I got to meet Dustin Hoffman. I would never have met him, would I?
Oh, otherwise. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I know. He's like royalty here in America.
Well, yeah. I think he's got a house in London as well. And so when he's over here, he's got a home. And he's got, I don't know if he's got two or three children. They will have all grown up now. This is a long time ago.
Right.
And his older son, who was a little bit too old for what I was doing, I was aiming at the 5, 6, maybe 7-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
But he was 8, 8 and a half. And he was not quite old enough to join in with the parents and a little bit too old for the sort of stuff I was doing for the 5-year-olds.
Right.
You know? And when the tea break came, I saw him sitting on his dad's lap crying.
Oh.
Well, sort of not sobbing, but looking unhappy. And I said, oh, what's happened here? And Dustin Hoffman said, oh, don't worry about it. He's just got a bad stomach at the moment. Well, being a children's entertainer, you can see exactly. You know the psychology of children well, especially after the amount of years I've done it. And I thought, this is green eye. I'm sure it is. So I said, oh, I can cure that. So Dustin said, no, don't worry, it'll be fine. And I said, no, really, I can cure it. Let him come with me for a second. So I took him and I did a magic trick where the type of magic trick where the magician goes wrong, but the child gets it right.
Right.
So that perked him up. And the next thing, when the children all came back, I made sure that I chose that boy to be the helper out the front. And we did a little routine together. And Dustin poked his head round into our little room and just winked because he'd seen what had happened.
Aww.
So that's another little story of mine that I tell at dinner parties.
That's amazing. I love that story.
Yeah. Nice, isn't it?
Yeah. So when you're out there, like you said just a minute ago, you were talking about how, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit nerve-wracking in front of all those, you know, famous people. How did you get over your nervousness to be able to get on with your show?
I think you just switch into auto.
Yeah.
Auto mode. It's a bit like when you're doing radio like we do.
Uh-huh.
You know, you arrive having overslept or feeling a bit groggy, but the minute the red light goes on, you tend to switch it up a bit. And I find that when I get into the costume, because for children's shows, I wear this silly outfit.
Yeah.
And as soon as you start, the theatre's the same. They call it Doctor Theatre, don't they?
Yeah.
That when I've done pantomime and things here in England, you can feel pretty groggy sometimes over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute you get on stage and the children start laughing, you know, you're fine.
Kind of heals your nervousness.
Yeah. And I'm a bit of a show-off as well.
No.
So, yeah, you know, so I don't mind. If it's something I know I'm good at, I'll happily do it.
Yeah.
For whoever's watching.
So tell me about your connection or your affiliation with the Wizard of Oz. We talked a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. One year, this came through radio. I was a local radio presenter for the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big company in England that put on pantomime, the biggest of the pantos, and they hire sort of big television stars and that to play the leads. And then they hire the supporting actors, people like me, people that work in radio that can help them plug the show and sell a few more tickets,
exactly.
I suppose, really.
Yeah.
But they asked me if I would be interested in doing a fairly local show. It's quite a big place. And I had to go to London to this very posh office and do an audition and read The Wizard in The Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
And for this very quite well-known impresario. And I got the job.
Wow.
And they asked me to play the wizard in The Wizard of Oz, which you can imagine I absolutely loved. And what they did, they asked me if, as I'm a magician anyway, because of the children's work that I do, can I add some of that in? Because this was a Christmas version of it, so they need a lot of comedy. And they wanted me to go out into the auditorium once the audience were there, but before the show started, and warm up the audience with a few magic tricks and things. And the idea was, once the orchestra were down in the pit and ready, they would flash a light and then I would know it was time to stop and get backstage and be the wizard. But one night they played a trick on me. They didn't switch the light on. So the entire cast and the orchestra were standing waiting, and they waited and they waited.
Oh.
And I was running out of things to say to this audience of about 2,000 people.
Oh, wow.
And I was running out of stuff to do, and I thought, whatever's happened, something must have gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out they were only playing a joke on me. It was a joke. But I went backstage, finally, the cast were glaring at me. I think they thought I was on some sort of ego trip and I wouldn't come off. It wasn't that. It's because I didn't get the signal.
Right. Oh, no.
Yeah. Shame, isn't it?
Oh, my.
Shame.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so we also, I know there's... Okay, so tell me a little bit about Ern and Vern.
Oh, Ern and Vern. When I was doing a very late night radio show for the BBC, sort of up to 1 a.m, at one point I had this young lad who come to answer the telephones because it was a phone in and music. And it turns out that we had such a rapport that I used to open his mic as often as not, and we would sort of double head it, although he wasn't actually there to do that.
Uh-huh.
And his surname involved the word Vernon. So we became Ern and Vern.
Okay.
And that it was a very, very cheeky. This was after some years of him answering phones for me, and then he went off to university and came back. But then the boss was looking for a show, and we quickly put a demo together,
uh-huh.
and we did this outrageous, you wouldn't be able to do it now, an absolutely outrageous camp show.
Okay.
Really. And we often think about it now, that what we got away with then. I mean, we used to have callers on,
mm-hmm.
and we used to ask them where they'd like to be shot. And then we'd have a sound effect of a gun and we'd shoot them and cut them off.
Oh.
And you'd never hear from them again.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the sort of things we did.
That's so funny.
Yeah, we'd get elderly ladies phoning us in, and we'd ask them what they're wearing. And they'd start to tell us, and we'd say, no, no, we mean underneath.
Oh, my goodness.
You couldn't do it now.
No way.
But it was very funny. It was purely, I mean, it soon caught on that there was no harm in it. It was just for us. And that ran so well that other radio stations bought it.
Really?
And before we knew where we were broadcasting across half of England on loads of local radio stations.
Oh, my goodness.
Used to tune in to Ern and Vern. In fact, if you look on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
look up Ern and Vern. Well, there's a lot of different Ern and Vern bits that listeners have put up. We've not put any of them up.
Okay.
But there's one that's Ern and Vern Mondeo.
Okay.
Mondeo is the name of a car.
Okay.
And the idea was we used to do prank calls, and they were live,
mm-hmm.
and we played this couple where Jonathan could do a very funny sort of middle-aged female voice. And so he would be Siobhan every week, and I would be Brian, the dumb husband. And this particular time, I'd apparently got my head stuck mm-hmm. in the glove box of the car. I don't know what you call that in America. You know, the little box just inside
the
passenger
door. Yeah, we call it the glove
passenger
box.
Door. Yeah. Oh, you do. And we phoned the manufacturer's Ford Motor Company
mm-hmm.
and asked how we can sort this out. And the man at the other end played along. And it was the funniest thing. It's on YouTube. You can hear it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't. I'm going to definitely
worth
go
looking
listen
up.
To that.
Yeah, yeah. It's
how
funny.
Funny. Mm. So it was all comedy. Yeah.
It was all comedy, and that got us going. And ever since then, really, as I've done radio more than anything.
Yeah.
Until I retired,
yeah.
And then I moved over to a radio station, and lo and behold, who should turn up but the famous Nikki James?
Hello.
Yes, there you are. You see.
Oh yeah, that was good times at the radio station over there.
In fact, virtually as you left
mm-hmm.
to go back to America, COVID arrived last March.
Yeah.
That was, and of course, I've not been to the studio since.
Really?
Because we're not allowed. No.
See,
so
it's like I left.
I'm broadcasting from this garden shed that I've got at home, where I am now.
Mm. I know. It's funny how you have to kind of, you know, just adapt to a completely whole new way of life. How's everything going with COVID over there?
The good news is that I think we were the first. We accepted one of the health authorities passed, or whatever mm-hmm. the term is, one of these inoculations that has come out, and now there's another one. So they've started inoculating as fast as they can. The very first day they did most of the care homes and the NHS nurses and people like that, the important people,
mm-hmm.
and they did thousands in the first day, and now it's gradually rolling out. So we're hoping by the end of January, because it takes a long time. You imagine how long it's going to take in America once you've decided on which mm-hmm. vaccination you're going to roll out to everybody. It's the logistics, isn't it? It's getting them. Because don't they have to travel at minus 80 degrees or something like that?
Yeah, they have to travel in refrigerated. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can't stick a block of ice in somebody's arm, can you?
No. Nope.
So it has to. So just traveling that round and getting it to room temperature in time to exactly the right time to inoculate people, and getting the people to it's going to be, the health centre or wherever they're going to be doing it.
Yeah.
You can imagine that multiplied by, you know, the whole of America. It's going to be. It's going to be quite a big job, isn't it?
It's all a learning experience too, because everything's new. We've never we've never had something like this, you know.
No, nor have we. Well, not since the plague.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. So I know people get so frustrated with all the rules and everything, but it's like, you know, better safe than sorry is what I say.
Yeah, I get a bit annoyed at people on social media that start complaining, why should we stay in? Why should we?
It's
against our rights. Well, yeah, you should do it because you're saving not only your own life, but the lives of others.
That's right. Yeah. It's not just about rights.
I don't know why people can't see that.
I know.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, well, there you are. Some people complain about everything, don't they?
That's very true. I wanted to ask you, since you've had such a vast lifespan of your career doing all this stuff, what's one of your favorite, like, if I had to ask you about your, like, favorite gig, what comes to mind?
Probably it would have been the...
The Prince Harry.
It would have been that, but I did another one for the same family, and this was for Prince William's 11th birthday party, believe it or not.
Wow.
Well, because 11-year-olds are a lot older than I would normally entertain.
Mm-hmm.
But, I entertain adult audiences, so, you know, you can do it. But anyway, they wanted a cowboy and Indian party.
Oh.
And so I said, yeah, okay. So I dreamed up loads of things like normal games, but I gave them other names like... where you would be, I don't know, I can't think of a good example. Dancing around the maypole, well, that would be the totem pole, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
In that, and jumping across a gap would be jumping across a creek.
Right.
And that's how I changed all of that. Then they phoned me up and said, "You don't know where we could get Stetsons from, do you? By any chance? Proper Stetsons for grown-ups." Well, I was the proud owner of a theatrical shop, wasn't I?
Oh,
selling fancy dress.
Yeah.
So I said, yes, I think I could probably find somewhere. And so I supplied the Stetsons. And what I wish I had was a camera. Well, because you wouldn't take a camera on a gig like that, obviously.
Yeah.
But if I had, I would have got a beautiful picture of Princess Diana wearing a white Stetson of mine. Imagine, I'd love that.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the second time you've mentioned her. Did you ever get to speak to her?
She was lovely. Yes, lots of times. Yeah. Lots and lots of times. Because I did the parties for many a long year at her father's place. Lord Spencer lives at a place called Althorp, which is in the very county that I'm sitting at the moment in England. And he used to throw a Christmas party every year for his grandchildren and their friends and friends of the family. And Princess Diana and the two boys were always there, always.
Oh.
And so that's probably how I got the job at Kensington Palace, really, because they knew me anyway.
Right.
And that was lovely. That was the most lovely party ever.
Oh.
Probably, if I'd have thought about it longer, I would have said that was my favourite gig, because Lord Spencer, that's her father. Do you remember him?
Do you remember
Diana's father? Yeah, he was a most lovely man. And the staff used to tell me, because I got to know a lot of the staff, as you can imagine, after all these years, that he got more excited on his children's party every year than he did on all the huge functions that they hold in Althorp. And he used to do his own shopping for it. Isn't that good?
Wow.
I mean, he didn't buy the food, I don't suppose.
Right.
But he bought all the Christmas gifts and things for all the children there. And I used to sit them. It's open to the public. You can go and have a look around Althorp. And they've got a huge, very grand staircase with great big oil paintings of their ancestors all round this staircase. And I used to sit the children 8 to a stair. That tells you how wide the stair is.
Wow.
All the way up the stairs. And I would stand at the bottom and do the show. And then I'd have to take them into tea in this beautiful dining room.
Yeah.
And in the second half, which I was meant to do another 3/4 of an hour, I never, ever finished it because at the appointed moment, Lord Spencer himself, more excited than any of the children, would say, "Bring them in, bring them here." So I'd have to take them into a little, I don't know what you call it, a little vestibule, really, with French windows onto the lawn. Mm-hmm. And this, remember, this was December, 5:30, so it was dark.
Yeah.
And there would be Santa, floodlit, coming across through the mist of December, coming across the lawn. And they didn't have a reindeer, But they did have, I don't know if it was a donkey or a pony now, I can't remember, and cart. And he'd get right to the window, and Lord Spencer by this time was beside himself, and he used to throw open these glass doors and say, bring it in, bring it in.
Oh.
And the entire, the pony, the cart, everything came in on this beautiful parquet floor.
Wow.
What damage it did to the floor, I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah.
And my job was to lift each child up onto the seat next to Santa. And then Princess Diana would climb up and sit next to them so that the child would have a photograph of their very own with Santa and Princess Diana.
Oh.
I bet they've all kept those, don't you?
Oh, I can imagine, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember thinking at the time, I bet the child is actually, because they're only 4 years old, they're mm-hmm. probably more impressed with Father Christmas than they are Princess Diana. But I'll bet anything you like that's swapped around now.
Yeah, that's definitely changed now.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, you should write a book, Ernie.
I'll tell you what he did at the end of the party. After we got rid of Santa, I had to go and carry on entertaining them while they cleared up.
Okay.
And he'd had some market stalls built, just little ones. And the visiting parents would be instructed, to say the least, to stand behind these stalls. And the children were all given a little bag of those, you know, those gold coins.
Yes.
Chocolate coins.
Yep.
But they're covered in gold foil.
Yep.
They'd be given a bag of those and they had to buy their going home presents with these chocolate coins. Well, you want to see a four-year-old, there's a giant present. Don't know what's in it. It's a great big box, all covered in Christmas paper and a big bow on it. And he's got to give away one of his chocolate buttons for it or chocolate coins. And four-year-olds love chocolate coins. And their faces, really, they're not sure really whether they've got a bargain or not. It's funny. So they had to buy their going home presents.
Oh.
I have a feeling that when they actually left, they were given the chocolate coins back. But they didn't know that at the time.
Or at
really
least their parents.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, good fun that was.
Wow. Yeah. What an experience that would be too, especially looking back.
Yeah. It's nice that is open to the public. You can go and have a look around the house. So if anybody
nice.
Ever does when you're in England, think of me at the staircase
nice.
Doing my act.
Or where was that?
It's a huge country house called Althorpe.
Althorpe.
Yeah, it's the Duke of... I nearly said Marlborough, but that's the wrong Duke.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lord Spencer, anyway.
There we go.
It was their home.
Yeah.
And it's still the home of the current Lord Spencer, Princess Diana's brother.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah. And she's buried in the grounds.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
She's
a lovely lady. Very funny, by the way.
You know, I've heard that. I've heard a lot of people said she was very down to earth. And
oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I remember when I finished the party, we were having a chat, her and her butler, I presume it was, and we were just having a chat about the party and things, and she was sitting on top of the washing machine, just like you do in your kitchen, you know, having a little natter.
Yeah.
Isn't that lovely?
Wow.
Yeah. She was very down to earth.
She just seemed like someone you could talk to. Like you could call up one of your friends and just have a regular conversation with. That's how she seemed.
I think you probably could. Although I have to say the whole royal family are absolute experts at putting you at your ease.
Yeah, they really are.
Everybody says that's met the Queen. I haven't met the Queen. But they say when they meet Her Majesty, she is as good as any of them at putting you absolutely at your ease.
I've heard some stories about how she's been out shopping and so I was when you were telling me that story, you paint such a good picture. I was thinking you should do books, and I was serious. I think you should write a book.
Yeah, a lot of people have said to me you should write a book with all this, because there's a lot more funny stories that I can't broadcast but I could possibly write in a book. But I often think some big stars have written their biographies, and then you find them 2 weeks later for you know, $1 in a end of line store. So,
but you know, sometimes
sadly people don't buy books.
That's true. But there's auto or what do you call them, audio books, and anyway.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I could do an audio book.
Yeah.
I could talk for the world, couldn't I?
I love it, though. So have you ever done any voiceover work for?
I've done a little. Yeah, I have done some voiceover work. I don't do so much now. I used to do a lot of cartoon voices.
Okay. What was the cartoon voice that you did?
Oh, various. It just depends who, you know.
Yeah.
Because
how do you find that work?
What you needed. Interesting. Fun. Great fun.
Yeah.
Great fun. Probably not quite as much fun as you might imagine, but it was good fun.
So what about, okay, so now that you're a radio DJ, and I know where you work.
Yes.
What's your favorite part about...
That's like a threat. I know where you live.
I know where you live. Yeah. Well, now I don't, because you work in your own office.
Oh, that's right, yeah. But hopefully back to the main studio soon.
You know,
that's... It is better quality there.
When do you think the studio will open up?
Well, it all depends on how soon the restrictions are lifted after they've given us all the inoculation. So, I can't really say, to be honest.
Okay, so I do have another question. What's your most embarrassing moment?
My most embarrassing moment?
Within the industry of entertaining.
Mainly in pantomime. Mm-hmm. Although the thing is, when things go wrong in pantomime, it's not embarrassing because everybody just laughs and enjoys it. Right. Pantomime, for those who don't know, is a peculiarly English Christmas entertainment where they have a man playing the part of the lady, and they often have a lady playing the part of the principal boy, and everything is muddled up, and it's just purely for fun. And I remember once I was in the story of Cinderella, playing one of the ugly sisters, believe it or not. And we were doing this part that we've rehearsed loads of times, and I suddenly realised the other ugly sister had disappeared was standing right upstage, apparently leaning against the wall. And they were all stone pillars. Well, it was scenery, but it looked like stone pillars of this beautiful palace. And it turns out that the other ugly sister had noticed that they hadn't put a stage weight on the thing at the back to hold it up, and it was slowly sinking towards us and the audience,
these great big
stone pillars. So it was actually holding up the scenery and carrying on doing all the words.
Oh my goodness.
And I was in I don't know if it was the same production, but another one of Cinderella again.
Yeah.
When the wheels fell off the coach.
Oh my gosh, no.
In front of the audience.
Oh,
I love things like that. Yeah.
Oh, that is funny.
Yeah.
On with the show.
Yeah, and we were talking about The Wizard of Oz. Well, the same company, Kudos, as I say, they are a very big company, and they're lovely to work for. Everything is very well organised. But then, of course, accidents do happen. And we were doing Jack and the Beanstalk, and they had the most amazing giant's outfit. So this man, who was already about 6'6", he walked on, you know, those big stilts that sort of strap around your legs. He had those inside the costume, so his feet were roughly where the giant's knee would be, if you see what I mean. And he was huge then, because he was about 12 foot high, this giant, huge thing. And one night, the webbing that straps to his legs went, and the stage manager wouldn't let him go on because it was dangerous. But the show had to go on. So we did this big build-up of the giants coming. And you could hear the footsteps, vroom, 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 as he came towards us. And when he came on, you could swear the giant was on his knees.
Oh.
This funny little man came on. Because he was only his normal height, and he was sort of dragging the leg part of the costume behind him.
Oh, no.
I love anything that goes wrong with me. Yeah.
It is very funny when things go wrong.
If you could take videos of rehearsals, especially of slapstick scenes and scenes, you know, where there's a bit of stuff being thrown around the stage, they're the ones. They're the ones to get, if you can get them.
Yeah,
I'm not allowed to do that.
Even with with my podcasting, and when I interview people, I have a whole section of bloopers that I do for when the things that you say that you have to cut out.
You're going to do a whole blooper one, are you?
I'm going to do. I'm going to. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we've done any today. That's a shame.
I know.
I'm going to.
We'll have to do one right.
I'd like to be in your blooper one.
Well, we'll do another one.
Yeah. We can't do mistakes. You can't act a mistake. It's got to be a genuine,
exactly,
a genuine error.
Well, and you and I do this for a living, so you know.
That's right. Yeah, we're pretty used.
We're
to
pretty
it.
Professional.
Yeah. I used to find you a question every time when you used to come in, a silly question.
That's right.
And I don't think you ever gave me an answer, but
I did once.
Oh, did you?
I did once, because I forget the question, but I had to write it down.
I'll finish on one. When we finish, I'll finish on a question, and your listeners can offer the answers if they want to you.
Perfect. I'll even put that up on social media, so...
Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's funny. Because I always used to follow your... I always used to come on after you.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you used to have the lunchtime slot.
I did.
Talking to all the people of St. Neots. And if people that don't know, we have two St. Neots in England. We have a St. Neots in near Cambridge, which is where we were. But there's another St. Neots down in Devon or Cornwall, down that way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we've got two... towns with the same name.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which is, well, it must be fascinating for the post office. I
know. Oh, my goodness. I didn't think about that. Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder how they're doing with quarantine and Christmas coming up. And...
Well, funnily enough, British post office put out an announcement yesterday that there will be delays due to the unexpected volume of post. Now, surely they knew Christmas was coming.
Yes.
Oh my God. They say unexpected?
Right. And you know, maybe they were talking about COVID, but clearly again, COVID has been going on for the whole of 2020, hasn't it?
I'm afraid so, yeah. And I've had 2 years of it. You've only had a year, because the year before that I had quite a serious operation, so I was out of action for a while.
Oh, wow.
And so I've had a couple of years of it. I'm okay now, though, folks. Don't panic. I'm going to live.
Good. England would not be the same without you, and neither would Black Cat Radio, that's for sure.
Well, that's very kind of you, Nikki. And we look forward to your visit.
Yes.
And if the studios are open, I'm hoping you'll call in.
I for sure will.
You'd think we were both in the same room.
I know. This is amazing.
Yeah, clever stuff.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know how it works. Don't ask me how it works.
That's a miracle. It's a Christmas miracle.
It is. It is.
Well, Ernie, thank you so much for talking to me for so long.
It's a great pleasure. A great pleasure. I hope you can find something of interest in all of this ramble that we've been doing now.
Yeah, that was wonderful. How long. I wanted to ask you before I let you go. Do you have any advice for people that might want to get into theater? Maybe on how to start?
Well, theatre, proper theatre, you do need training. So you need to start when you're young, really, because then you need to get to a theatre school. And don't just go to any theatre school, because so many of them these days are churning out actors and actresses by the dozen when there's no work for them. You need to do your homework on which theatre school to go to. That will pay off dividends later in life, I promise you. Yeah. Get the agency that you know has had a lot of success, and if you can get in with them, or the theatre school, I should say. You won't get an agent until you finish the theatre school.
Yeah.
But if you want to get into broadcasting, that's a different thing. The way to get into broadcasting is to offer to do it for nothing for a while and come in and make the tea.
Yep.
And before you know where you are, you'll be... a broadcaster.
That's right. Internships is what we like to call them. Fancy names.
Oh, do you? Making
internships,
tea.
Yes.
All right.
Would you like to be an intern?
No, I didn't realize interns didn't get paid.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yep. Oh. It's the fancy word for free work. Well, again, thank you so much, Ernie.
It's a great pleasure, Nikki. Yeah. Lovely to speak to you. And here's my question. Are you ready?
All right, let's go.
If sheep are left out in the rain, why don't they shrink? Goodbye.